We're going to go really quickly. We've got actually less than an hour in this section here. And this may be one of the more important things that we actually dig into in terms of our personal leadership and team corporate leadership, which is communication. As I travel around the world, the number one issue in almost every organization, and again, our definition for organization is anywhere where two or more people are in relationship with each other, revolves around communication. Some level of communication has not either been executed or it's been interpreted in a way that has created some kind of conflict, or that misinterpretation has caused an individual to respond in a different way. And the thing that I'm going to hope to, you know, show you over this next few minutes is how communication is actually connected to our brains, how communication is connected to the things that make up communication, and then how we can actually get better with a communication tool that we call the slower listening model. All right? So that's all going to happen here in the next few minutes. Sound good? All right. Here we go. And if I see anybody nodding off, I'll probably make you do calisthenics, head, shoulders, knees, and toes. All right, you ready? All right, so here's our envision evaluate around this particular subject today. Communication is not easy, right? Most organizations have their greatest issues in this one area. Knowing this is the case, what if you could leave our time together with the ability to communicate better or differently? Would you like to have that?
Yes.
Number two, here's our evaluate. Is the way you're communicating now producing the results that you want in your relationships and roles? All right? So those are it's the envision evaluate. It's the ability to look forward and look within. So now let's dig in here just a little bit. All right? Let's talk about how we learn. I don't know if you're familiar with this particular mantra, but we have a thing that we share that says, tell me, I forget. So think about our communication styles. Even me, from this platform, delivering in this particular session what's going to be mostly a tell me orientation. The unfortunate thing for me is that the majority of it will be forgotten within 24 hours of this experience right here. All right? So knowing that that's a part of how communication works and how we learn when it comes to communication styles, we need to change it. And so we actually say, tell me I forget, teach me I remember. Knowing that the style in which we communicate with the objective of actually doing something more than just imparting information needs to actually have influence and impact, I now move from a tell-me orientation to a teach-me orientation. So tell me I forget, teach me I remember, involve me, I understand. So think about this short time we've had together and the different ways in which I've had you interact and I've interacted with you. I've done a unique blend of tell me, teach me, involve me, haven't I? I've had you guys connect together with one-on-one discussions, a little bit of group time. I've had you get involved in your own understanding of what these tools mean to you by doing an evaluation on them. So I've at least ratcheted up the personal percentage just a little bit in hopes that this will be far more meaningful to you as we leave here tomorrow, okay? So we took this mantra right here, tell me I forget, teach me I remember, involve me I understand, and we added to it based on what we do within transformational leadership. And our add-on looks like this. If I understand it, I can own it. If I understand it, I can own it. If I own it, I can live it. And if I live it, I can teach, train, and equip others to do the same. Tell me I forget. Teach me I remember. Involve me I understand. If I understand it, I can own it. If I own it, I can live it. And if I live it, I can teach, train, and equip others to do the same. Now, our ability to communicate with each other and to be productive and accomplish great things, goes to a completely different level. All right? So, a little bit of a purview or a peek into our personal vision around transformational leadership. Our vision is to teach, train, and equip leaders who are willing to teach, train, and equip other leaders who are willing to teach, train, and equip even more leaders. So when I walked into the room last night and I looked across the room, I did not just see individual business owners or individuals here. I actually saw three generations beyond you. Because I'm always thinking in that discipleship orientation, which is the teach, train, and equip. The Word of God says to go and make disciples of all nations. What does it look like to make disciples of nations? We have to teach them. We have to train them. We have to equip them. And in a while, I'm going to show you our purpose of leadership tonight when we get to this spot, where you'll see teach, train, and equip woven between casting vision and evaluating. Okay? So we set this up because we know how powerful this is in terms of how we learn and then how we engage in that learning communication process. Okay? So let's keep going. Here's a little chart for you. This was created by the World Bank. All right? And this is just scientific fact in terms of how we learn. On the far left, you see a lecture-oriented communication. And on the far right, you have a teaching others-oriented communication. Okay? This is how we learn. Within 24 to 48 hours, if you were in a lecture or tell me style, you would only be able to remember 5% of that information that was shared with you. However, if you add reading to it, it now doubles to 10%. And if you add audio-visual, like some of the virtual interactive stuff that I've been putting, it now goes up another 10% to 20%. And then demonstration, 30%. Talked about it this morning. Inside the box, we get challenged to what? Go outside the box, it gets uncomfortable, what do? We crawl back in the box because I demonstrated it. I told you last night, everything is connected to everything. This training is like a woman's brain, all right? Everything is connected to everything, right? The food we just ate to the time we had it, it's all part of the weekend. It's all connected, all right? All the way to discussion groups, practicing by doing, which was part of the empowerment that I gave you last night, and then eventually teaching others, okay? So here's your challenge. As you leave here, I want you to think about who you might share some of this experience and these tools with, all right? Write their name down, all right? Who are you going to actually share these tools with? Now watch. Here's how you're going to couch this. Tell them, I want you to help me learn, and so I'm going to teach you what I've experienced over the weekend, all right? Now, I'm not teaching you so that necessarily you have to learn. You're actually helping me learn, so you're telling them up front so that this isn't some, like, higher and mighty sort of thing. This is you saying, you're going to help me gain knowledge by me sharing with you and teaching you what I just picked up. If that's the case, what you share is now going to probably be permanent with you for quite some time. All right? So now think about your styles, how your teams work, how you communicate, and what part of your communication looks like this, and what part of your communication looks like that. All right? So again, we're always communicating whether we know it or not. How we communicate is the intentionality by us as leaders to do it in a specific way so that others can be influenced. Does it make sense? Any questions around this here? Again, I'm going to keep things moving in this hour here. Yeah, ideally you want to engage sort of in the next levels of this within 24 to 48 hours. Otherwise, gets past 48 hours, it's now sort of slipped through the cracks, and there's a good possibility if you haven't done anything with what you've learned in these 2 days, 3 days, there's a good chance that you'll go, oh yeah, I went to Boost last year. That was cool. It's the difference between this being a retreat and an advance. Some of you are here to retreat, which is great. I'd encourage you to make this an advance. We retreat enough as humans. Let's get out there and just knock them alive, huh? What do you think? Anybody with me? No, it's all right. Easy, easy, easy. All right, here we go. I want to talk to you about how we think and how our brain works, all right? So we've got a part of our brain. I don't know if you've heard this scientific stuff, but this is called the hippocampus. The hippocampus is a very tiny part of our brain that actually sits back here in the back of the brainstem. There's actually two of them. They're really small, and this part of our brain is called the hippocampus because it's from the Greek word, which means seahorse, okay? And this part of our brain has a significant amount of influence on who you are and your self-identities, all right? Now, we aren't going to have time today to talk about self-identity, but our definition of self-identity is the thoughts I believe to be true about myself. The hippocampus is an area that is often referred to as the impression holder, okay? And in order for an impression or an experience to become a permanent part of that part of our brains, it needs to come with passion and emotion plus purpose. If it does, and it's even repeated in a similar way multiple times, it embeds itself. It literally knocks on the door of our brains, that hippocampus area, and asks for permission to come in. And because it does come with passion and emotion, plus intent or purpose, all of a sudden it opens up and it becomes a permanent part of our brains. Have you ever gone back into an area that you grew up in, and as you drove into that area, all of a sudden you began to think about things that you hadn't thought of in 30 years? Yeah, that's your hippocampus. Those are things that have been stored in there. And your hippocampus is activated by your senses. It can be activated by your smell. It could be activated by a sound that you hear. It could be activated by body language that's communicated from others. It's an amazing part of our brain, okay? And it literally triggers those stored memories, and it brings it right to the forefront of your brain. And you think about them as if it had happened yesterday, okay? Now, I grew up in a home, as I told you last night, where my father was an alcoholic, and oftentimes his alcoholism would go to a place where it wasn't real healthy. And for one reason or another, out of the six kids, I was number five, by the way. There were two boys, two girls, and two boys. So I was five out of six. And for one reason or another, I was on the wrong end of my dad's anger, physical anger. When I was 4 years old, having hung out with my older brothers and heard some really flowery language in the backyard that day, I decided to share that language at the dinner table. My dad had not had the best of days, and his emotions snapped. He grabbed me out of the table and shook me like a rag doll in front of the rest of the family until my mom said, "Bob, stop." A couple years later, another incident comes up, and my dad literally beats me with his belt for the behavior. 3-4 years later, I'm 12 years old, and the activity in our home is now, the conflict's so thick that I can't stand it, and I decide to run away from home. I pack up a little backpack, I go to the park where all of my friends hung out, and one of my friends has a mini bike. We get on the mini bike and we go driving around. And I come back, my friends who stayed at the park said, your dad was just here and he's looking for you. Your mom's been taken to the hospital. She had a nervous breakdown because you ran away from home. So I decide to go home and find out what's going on. It was all a ruse by my dad. He was waiting in the driveway for me and gave me the worst physical beating that I've ever had in my life up to this day. Do you think that had any impression on me? Now watch this. This is how subtle the hippocampus is when it comes to communication. My dear friend Ford has been a spiritual leadership, man-to-man mentor, friend that unlike any other man that's ever been in my life. And we actually talk about things like feedback, all right? So he said, can I give you some feedback? I said, sure. Now we in our team, we operate. Look, everybody is open to feedback. It doesn't mean all feedback's true. It just means we're going to be open to it and we're going to receive it and process it. He said, when we're with certain types of people, you're disruptive. And I said, explain it. And he explained it. I said, sorry, I don't see it. He said, the next time I see it, can I show it to you? And I said, sure. So we're at an event. He's talking to a friend, mutual friend named Brian. I see him over at the side of the room. And I go, I'm Tigger. I go bounding up, ding, 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 ding. And I interrupt. I didn't see it as an interruption. Ford's my friend. Brian's my friend. I want to get in with them, right? I want to get a part of this great conversation that they're having. As soon as I walked up, he goes like this, and he grabs my arm. He goes, that's it. The problem was the way he grabbed my arm flashed a hippocampus thing for me. It was the same way that my dad used to do it, except in a really negative way. And I shut down. I couldn't hear another word he said. That's the way our brains operate, guys. When we're communicating with other people, there are a lot of things that are at play that intersect with how we interpret and how we process. A little period of time went by, and he walks over and he says, are we okay? I go, no, we're not. About 24 hours goes by. He's smart enough not to poke the bear right now. So 24 hours goes by. We talk it through. He said, was there something about what I did that actually sent you in a negative way? He said, because you know, all I was doing was acting on the permission you gave me. You gave me permission to give you feedback. I gave you feedback, but you reacted to it in a completely negative way. So then I began to explain to him what happened when he did it. So like any really good friend and bumper buddy, he prayed with me, so that piece would no longer be a part of how I filter and see things. You see, here's the powerful thing. That part of our brain, we can't erase the hard drive. We can't erase the memories. But you can heal the hippo. You can heal the hippo. Because look here, guys, it's not the things that have happened to us that keep us bound. It's not even the things that we've done that keeps us bound. It's the lies associated with those things. And if we can actually harness and identify the lie, which is, for years and years, I believed that my dad hated me. Is that true? No. My dad did not hate me. Matter of fact, my dad loved me like unbelievably. My dad just had a way of communicating that actually got in his way a lot of times, like all of us. It's not the things you've done, and it's not the things that have been done to you that keep you bound. It's the lies. And if you can identify those things, you can actually take those lies, put them at the altar of God, let the blood of the Lamb and what Jesus has already bought and paid for do a redemptive work in those, change the lie into the reality and truth that it's been meant for all your life, and now walk in freedom and truth. That takes some intentionality. That's a whole nother part of our training that we call the missing link. I don't have time for that today. But I've given you hopefully enough to sort of say, wow, these are really core important things when it comes to what affects our communication and our interpretation of communication. Everybody understand? Are we good? Any questions at all about this piece right here? The hippo, the memories are going to be there. They're there. They may only pop up every once in a blue moon, but the reality is we can heal the hippo by actually changing our interpretation of those lies into what really is true about them, okay? And there's a lot to that that's based in, again, in our identity, the thoughts I believe to be true about myself, depending on where I put the emphasis in that definition, depends on, you know, where I may need to sort of work or develop. All right, so let's look a little bit further into a key tool here. This is our thinking model. All right, can I tell you a quick story? In the early 2000s, our oldest daughter, Emily, went off to Ohio State University as a freshman. She lived in the dormitory her freshman year, had a great freshman year, grades off the charts, got involved in a couple different clubs, met new people, really had a great, great year, okay? Between her freshman and sophomore year, she said, Mom and Dad, Ashley and I want to move into an apartment off campus. And so we actually tried to deter her, put her off for at least another year, and have her do it between her sophomore and junior year. Long story short, she ended up doing it. The weekend that she moved in, at that particular time, by the way, my wife Leslie and I lived in Youngstown, Ohio, so about 3 hours northeast of Ohio State University in Columbus. The weekend that she moved in, I was not there, but she moved in. Her girlfriend Ashley was not there either. But Leslie and Emily went out to dinner Saturday night after the big day of moving and cleaning and getting the apartment all set up. And then when they were done with dinner, Leslie dropped Emily back off at the apartment by herself and went to her sister's, who lived in Gahanna, which is a little community outside of Columbus. At 6:30 the following morning, which was Sunday morning, September 15th, the phone rings in Youngstown, Ohio, and it's my Emily. I pick up the phone, and she's hysterical, and I can't understand what's going on. I said, Emily, I need you to try to take a deep breath and tell me what's happening. She said, Daddy, a man broke into the apartment, held a knife to my throat, and attacked and raped me. Now, in that brief moment, every one of you in this room, as I shared that story, had a a thought or two that went through your brain. And in some cases, that thought immediately was identifiable with a feeling. All right? Now, I'll tell you the rest of the story here in a moment. But as we identify the power of our brains, and then you even hear stories like that from me, our brains begin to activate in specific ways, don't they? Those thoughts create feelings. Those feelings eventually create behaviors and actions. Now watch. What we don't believe when we're in the midst of some of those very difficult, hard to process challenges and changes in our lives is that we can actually harness new thoughts and begin to create new patterns of feeling and behavior. That day, by the way, was the worst day of my life. I was 3 hours away, felt completely helpless. In the midst of that particular exchange with Emily, I said, Emily, I'm going to tell you to do a few things here. I need you to listen very carefully, and then you're going to repeat back to me exactly what I want you to do. I said, in a moment, Daddy's going to hang up the phone and you're going to call 911. And you're going to tell the police where you are and to come. When you're done with the 911 call, you're going to then call Mommy over at Aunt Lynn's house. When you're done calling Mommy at Aunt Lynn's house, you're going to call me back and you and I are going to stay on the phone until either one of them comes to the apartment. Do you understand? Yes, Daddy. She did that. Once all that got settled in, the remainder of the day with a phone call here or there was literally an unraveling for me. And the next 48 hours after that was an even worse unraveling. I wanted to take matters into my own hands. If you're a man in this room, you know what I'm feeling. I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of frustration. I felt helpless. I wanted to take control. That control was not available to me. I was literally crafting a plan in my mind to go buy a gun because I'm not a gun owner, get the gun, get in the car, drive to Columbus, and look for the first man who fit the description and shoot him and kill him. Does that register with anybody in this room? Sure it does. If you're a dad, you'd probably have the same feelings. Here's the problem with that thinking. It was not going to give me the results of healing and help that Emily needed, was it? Matter of fact, it probably would have exacerbated the problem. Am I right? In our worst self, we often don't have the clarity to actually change our thoughts into a pattern of thinking that says, this is really what I need to do. Okay? Now, this is long before I got connected with transformational leadership and learned this tool. But two and a half days later, I'm in my office at home, and I finally decide that I'm going to pray. And I ask God, what do you want me to do? And the Lord took me to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And he said, Patrick, I want you to read verses 4 and 5. Does anyone have their Bible? If you do, pull it up. He says, I want you to read verses 4 and 5. So I went. I opened up my Bible and actually read those two verses. And God literally showed me how to do TFA. Who's got it? Somebody got it? In the back there, standing loud and proud for us. So don't go anywhere. Stay right there. Now, I read that, those two verses, and I actually got mad with God. I go, are you kidding me? This is what you have for me? You want me to take captive my thoughts? Again, I'm not in the best position right here. My demeanor's not really healthy here in this position. But I'm having an argument with God. And he says to me, Patrick, I need you to read one more verse. And that's when I read verse 6. Did you hear what God was saying to Patrick? He's saying, Patrick, if you do this, I'll do this. These are what we call dependent events. They're all over the Bible. You do this, God, being the heavy lifter, says, I'll do this. There's a gap between me doing this and God doing this and even getting to that doing this called faith. And in between that is a lot of faith and courage, faith and courage. It's the process of changing the way we think. God says, if you change the way you think, you're going to change the way you feel. If you change the way you feel, you're going to change the way you behave. Now, watch this. Here's the pattern. An event takes place, maybe just like the one I shared with you. From that, a thought occurs. Even if it is a passive thought, something is running through your brain, okay? Once a thought is generated, a feeling is generated. And then finally, after a feeling is generated, an action or behavior is chosen. I was now being invited into a new process. You ready for this? Here's the new process. The event takes place. A thought occurs. A feeling's generated. You guys just heard where I was at in that process, right? Here's what God said to do. Change your thought, Patrick. Hey, Patty, you can't think this way and get Emily into a place of healing and wholeness. It's impossible to solve this problem with that mindset. If I can change my thought, a new feeling gets generated. And if a new feeling gets generated, a different action or behavior is chosen. Now, this may seem almost too simplistic to actually work, but let me just tell you my story as it wraps up. For the next 6 months, Emily went to counseling. By the way, that day, after reading those verses, I got down on my knees and I prayed and I made this commitment to God and to my family. I said, Lord, I don't know what to do here. I feel helpless. I do not have the mind and the wherewithal to solve this issue. But I trust you. I declared my trust again. I said, I trust you. Not sure how this is going to work out. And I'm going to focus on getting Emily and our family in a place of healing and wholeness. Okay? That was my prayer that day. Give me the ability to do it. That's what I prayed. And I said, I literally said, Lord, I trust you with Emily's life. Went through this process, 6 months back and forth. Emily is actually doing an amazing job, if you will, of healing and progressing through this issue. We're down at the kitchen table. All of a sudden, Emily comes down. It's one morning. She goes, Dad, Mom, can I talk to you? Sure, babe. What's going on? She said, I've been thinking about things and I want to go back to school. Well, you know Dad. Dad goes, that's a good idea. You can stay here at the house. Youngstown State University is 7 blocks away. You can go down there, finish your degree. That'd be awesome. That would be so good for you to get back to school. And she looks at Mom and I and shakes her head and she goes, no, Dad, I want to go back down to school. I want to go back to the scene of the crime. I want to go back to where all the heartache took place. I want to go back to school. Immediately, the hippocampus is very recent and saying, what? No. All the internal objections and reasons why this wouldn't work out and the reason why doing it isn't, you know what you do, the mental gymnastics. Long story short, we moved Emily back down to Ohio State University, into a new neighborhood, into a new apartment, and got her back on path, all right? About 3 weeks into the new semester, it's a Wednesday night, I'm home alone again, and the phone rings, and it's Emily. Except this time, she's really excited. She goes, Daddy, Daddy, guess what? I go, what? They caught the guy. Once your obedience is complete, I'll be able to punish all disobedience. I had some great bumper buddies. This is where your bumper buddies come in. You can't do this alone. And those bumper buddies would literally call me about every other day and say, how you doing? You need to talk? You need anything from me? They loved me enough to say, how you thinking these days? Because in those very difficult, intense situations, you need those bumper buddies. In the middle of the night, you need those friends. You need that community. Now, it doesn't have to be this extreme. Anybody here ever had road rage besides me? I had a little problem with that at one time. I'm not saying it was a proud moment in my life, but, you know, I used to get a little aggressive while I drove, and Leslie just didn't care for it when she saw me get aggressive behind the wheel, so she'd try to tell me to calm down. So one time I got a little too aggressive and she was in the car. She said, I am not going to drive in this car with you again if that's the way you're going to drive. So she made her decision. She said, you want to drive that way? Great. That's up to you. But I'm not riding with you if you're going to ride that way. Guess what? I was at a point of decision, wasn't I? I had to do something with my behavior. This behavior is not working favorably for me because I actually enjoy riding in the car with Leslie. All right? So guess what I did? I literally took post-it notes and wrote down the new thoughts that I was going to think. And I put them on my dash of my car. The first one said, be patient, you're not in a hurry today. The second one said, the other person may have an emergency. Let them go by you. All right? And the third one said, you have a brake pedal. Use it. All right? All right, not a whole lot of rocket science, but watch this, guys. Now, I got in my car, and guess what I saw the very first thing when I got in? Those three yellow post-it notes. The intentionality around doing this kind of stuff, because if you wait till you're in the moment, it's too late. Anybody ever heard about the idea that feelings rule? Right? My wife teaches six-year-olds. Six-year-olds' feelings rule, okay? Well, 55-year-olds every once in a while, feelings rule, okay? And because of that, if we haven't predetermined how we're actually going to address certain things, when the moment is upon us, it's too late. So the intentionality around how you're going to change your thinking before the next episode happens is how you do a thing that we call TFA, change your thoughts, change your feelings, change your actions. All right? Questions, comments, feedback around this piece right here.
What were the Bible verses that Paul read?
That's 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 4, 5, and 6.
Thank you.
This here is found in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Paul writes over and over again in the Word about elevating our thinking, about changing our mindsets. Just read the epistles. He tells the Colossians to change the way they think. He tells the church in Philippi to change the way they think. He tells the Ephesians. He tells told the church in Rome. This you know, area out of Romans, he's always talking about, get your mind right. Because he knows that from his encounters with the Lord, that the Lord said, you need to change the way you think. In Isaiah, it says, for my thoughts are not like your thoughts. They're higher than your thoughts. So God isn't telling us that we're inferior, though we are. He's actually trying to get us to elevate our thinking. He says, so why don't you come up here where I am and think the way I think? That's what he's doing. He's inviting us. He said, here's the gap. If you start coming up here into these heavenly places, because that's where we're seated, by the way, right? You may get some insights into your world and life that are eluding you right now. So this is a powerful part of our training. And I wanted to give it to you because I thought, man, if you get this, guys, This is going to change the way you think about yourself, and it's going to change the way you engage with others, which is such a big part of communication. Any other questions, comments, or feedback? All right, here we go. Let's speed it up. Remember, there's always one more thing that we don't know about someone that if we did, probably change. This is Oswald Chambers, by the way. That's his quote. There's always one more thing about a person's life that we know nothing about. We got this thing called the bridge of transformation. We believe that everything that we teach is really simple, but not easy. Therefore, we make it complicated. In this river of complication, there's a lot of stuff. Anger, bitterness, resentment, shame, fear, whatever it might be. But on the other side of this river of complication, which we call the bridge of transformation, everything that's always been simple now becomes easier. It never really gets completely easy, but it does get easier. All right? All right. Don't know if you know this, but men and women do not think the same. Women's brains and men's brains are a lot different, okay? Anybody know what this is? Look at there. That's a woman's brain. It's a mess. It's like super internet highway. Imagine having every single app on this iPad open simultaneously, and they were all interacting, Eddie. That's this woman's brain right here. Let me tell you. It's like spaghetti. Everything is connected to everything. The dog's connected to the husband. The husband's connected to the wallet. The wallet's connected to the kids. The kids are connected to the mother-in-law. The mother-in-law's connected to church on Sunday. Church on Sunday's connected. It's all connected in a woman's brain, all right? It's just an ism. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just the way things are, all right? Now, guys are different. Men got a box for the home. They got a box for a family. They got a box for work. Boom, boxes everywhere, right? Boxes for everything, let me tell you. Here's the difference between a man's brain and a woman's brain. And again, this is generally speaking. A man has to process out of his home box in order to get into his family box. And then he's got to process out of his family box to get into his work box. And if he's not completely processed out of one, he's a muddle when he comes in. Like if he comes home from work and he's still in his work box and you ask him about family stuff, whoa, slow down here. Whoa. Don't be hitting me with a bunch of stuff right when I walk in. Why? Because he's not in his family box yet. Hey, husbands, guys, don't walk in the door until you're in your family box from now on. Who's responsible for being in their family box? Raise your hand. I am, right? All right? So that means you come ready to go, all right? No longer are you still in your work box. It's time to be in the family box when you get home. Now watch. Men also have two boxes that are really big, and they're bigger than the other two boxes. One of them has absolutely nothing inside of it. Zero, nilcho, nada. It's called his empty box. It's one of the reasons why men can sit in front of the TV and just, I mean, it's called remote love, man. They just take that little remote and they're going, ding. Mouse, you can always tell when a man's in his empty box. His mouth is open just enough. It's a partial indication that his brain is just flatlined. There's nothing going on there, all right? It's zeros. It's why men go fishing. And we love to get to this box, let me tell you. And here's the powerful thing. A man can get to that empty box without processing. It's one of two boxes that he can get to without processing. He can get to his empty box within seconds. He can get back on the highway within seconds. He's in his empty box. You're about to have a conversation with him about the whole weekend. He's like, huh? You've been there. You know that. Yeah, I'm not telling lies here, right? He's also got a box that's bigger than all of the others, and it's his sex box, right? Come on, let's be honest, right? So he can get to that box quicker than any of the others either. I don't need to tell you all about this. You know it. You've experienced it. All of a sudden, he becomes amorous, and you're like, what is going on here? We are in the Walmart, all right? Yeah, it's like, sorry, honey, I just, something came over me. What happened? All right, so it's just the difference between men's brains and women's brains, okay? And you need to know that it affects our communication, all right? There's also a box that is not known by a lot of scientists. It sits in between the empty box and the sex box. It's pretty big, too. It's called the clueless box. All right? I don't know, ladies, if you've ever seen your men sort of walk through the kitchen and literally go like this and step over the garbage and just sort of keep going. He's not in his garbage box. That's why he just did it. But you're like going, oh, my God, you just did not walk over that. That bag of garbage has been sitting there for a half a day. You could have picked it up like this and taken it right out to the bin, but no, that's not where he was. He was in another box, whatever box it was, all right? Walk right over a basket of laundry, just like this. And you ladies think he's doing it on purpose. You're going, I cannot believe this guy. He is too much, right? Trust me, it's called his clueless box. Us guys have them, all right? Now, ladies, if you'll love us enough to tell us and keep telling us, and men, if we're willing to learn and say, keep telling me, honey, one of these days I'm actually going to trip over it and bend over and pick it up. I swear I will. I swear I will. All right? So, again, we just share this because it affects communication. We don't have time for the other ones, but another thing, if you've probably heard about it, that really helps communication, it's called the five love languages. You guys heard about that? I highly encourage you to check it all out. There's five of them there. I'm not going to do that one. We have a thing that's called first impressions. Believe it or not, it takes less than 30 seconds to make a first impression. So that happens with individuals, and it also happens with organizations. So ask yourself a question. What's our first impression to our clients, our customers, our business partners? Because they're picking up something within seconds, all right? And then watch this. If you know you made a bad first impression, it could take as many as 20 or more times to change that negative bad first impression. How many of us get 20 more times? We don't, do we? So guess what tool I taught you in the last session that you could actually use if you knew you made a bad first impression to actually help bring that back down to one additional encounter. That's right, the six-step apology. If you know that you botched it, and we all do, they're called oops, all right? They're opportunities to improve, all right? And we all oops. So when you know you've oopsed, use one of your tools, your six-step apology, and figure out a way to engage. It'll actually build probably a stronger relationship than if you would have just let it go. All right? Here's our three things that make up communication. Actual words, tone of voice, body language. Can someone tell me what the largest one of those three is? The greatest percentage of actual words, tone of voice, or body language. Which one carries the most weight? That's right. So watch. Well, we heard a moment ago that words matter. Okay? And they do matter. At the end of the day, your influence is coming in a larger percentage from your body language. So, everybody ready? I'm really excited to be here with you. What? Huh? Those are great words. I'm really excited to be here with you. Versus, I'm really excited to be here with you. The body language changes, your tone changes. We worked with a customer service or call center, and one of the things that we did to help this part of their communication improve is that we put mirrors at the desks of every one of the operators. so that they could look at themselves before they clicked and answered the phone. And their first, they had like a bullet list of things that they had to do. Their very first thing was smile. Your body language is going to change the way your tone sounds on the other end. The body's an amazing thing, right? So all these communication pieces become critical when it comes to how we communicate with others, all right? And if we can elevate our communication, we can actually improve our ability to be healthier, productive, and profitable. So let's close with a little evaluation here, all right? I'll read this off to you. Got to put my cheaters on since I'm 55 and getting blinder here. All right, ready? Now, I want you to think about this in the context of four types of ways you would answer. Rarely, occasionally, often, usually. Okay, those are your four categories. You can either answer rarely, occasionally, often, or usually. Okay? Now I want you to think about yourself. You ready? We're going to do a quick quiz. Going to have you think about how you are when others are talking to you. When others are talking to you, I find myself finishing their sentences. Rarely, often, or rarely, occasionally, often, or usually. So think about yourself. It's a communication quiz here. Got it? Here's another one. When others are talking to you, I give my opinions before hearing them out. I get restless and impatient. I lose track of what is being said. I fidget with other objects. As I hear a pen click off to my right, this is awesome. I mentally rehearse what I'm going to say next. I take control of the conversation. I interrupt with frequent comments or questions. I answer before getting understood. I immediately diagnose the problem. I listen briefly and then begin talking. So those are some examples right there. All right? So if you answered often, usually, while those were being read, you probably need the slower listening tool, which I'm going to launch us with here, all right? Here it is. It has six primary areas. This is the tool, all right? The S stands for square up and silence. The L stands for lean in and listen. The O is for open posture and open-ended questions. The W is for willing to be engaged. The E is for eye contact. And the R is for relax, respond, and repeat if necessary. Look at that. 2:14. Boom, chakalaka. Are there any questions? Any thoughts, any contributions that anyone wants to make? Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that whole idea of actually hiring people who are good at certain communication styles and skills and then making them better is a lot easier than people who are bad at communication skills and styles and trying to get them to be even good. It's hard work. Any others? Thank you so much, you guys.